You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome. I told you this, there would be a couple surprises. This is Matt's Choice, as he'll talk about a little bit in my science project. This is kind of a one-on-one podcast type situation. This one, just the way it worked out. But this is a weird movie involving sci-fi elements and weird, just, you know, it's just weird. Just listen. If you haven't seen it, we saw it on YouTube for free, so you go ahead and watch it and enjoy with us. Anyway, thanks for all the support we've been getting. A new season, we expected some love, and we got it, and it's been awesome. I hope you guys translate that to sharing it with someone new. You know what? If you prove to me that you have done this in a way where you can, if you've shared it with new people and you've gotten them to listen, okay, and they, you know, whatever, if you can prove to me that you've created a new myopia fan, I'll send you the next bonus episode early. How about that? Just put on the Facebook page, tweet at us at Myopia Podcast, something like that, and we'll reward you for your efforts, okay? Otherwise, keep posting to Facebook and tell us what you got and what you think we should be doing instead.
We need to tape a promo, guys. If you had to encapsulate the roundtable in one catchphrasey kind of way, what would you say?
Rampant geekery? Redonkulous? let's not go with Shrek. That you know. The first one was good. The second one was great. After that, it kind of, you know.
Guys, promo. Stay on topic here. Okay. Stay on topic.
Stay on topic. Oh, no, I'm going in.
Stay on topic. Stay on topic.
Topic.
Red leader, I'm no, I'm sorry.
Stay on topic.
I can't see it. It's up to you, Red 5.
Oh, God.
The promo.
So, promo! The Roundtable, brought to you by Revolution SF. Tough love for sci-fi. Available at revolutionsf.com and iTunes.
In a world with an oversaturation of movie podcasts, comes two hosts lacking in movie knowledge, but making up for it with original movies.
All right, so we got a stenographer, vigilante, Indian, who kills people with goat horns.
And goat bullets. The stenographer, colon, read that back.
Original songs.
Ant-Man, you ain't got a chance, man. Super suit my ass, man. This ain't no enhancement.
All he can say, two words, one phrase, Hulk smash.
Add Lincoln Nose to your playlist. Otherwise, you are a racist.
And original trailers for fictional movies. Adam Sandler and introducing Sarah Lee Evanson as Sarah Lee Evanson in Infinite Blood.
Ted Bundy shames DMX a lot.
Like, no joke, I told a 12-year-old kid not to f*** up his acting.
It's our podcast, you dicks.
Movie speaking.
Welcome to Dial M for Movie. Three questions, two minds, one podcast.
Welcome to My Infinite Childhood. This week we're talking about the 1985 Fisher Stevens movie, I guess. My science project. So, Matt, before we get too far into this, this month, of course, is Precocious Kids. That's why we did Matilda. Mm-hmm. And we did Casper last week. And so we have like a lot of, you know, middle school kids kind of being precocious and taking over stuff. So why'd you choose this movie?
Okay, this is a nostalgia trip. So, when I was a little kid, there used to be these wonderful places called video rental stores. And there's one at the Parkair Shopping Center in Cobb County. on Johnson Ferry Road as you get down towards Sandy Springs. And there was a movie rental store there. And I remember one evening, Mom and Dad rented a movie for me called My Science Project, which I must have rented because it had aliens and stuff in it. And I remember watching it. I just don't remember it very well. Of it involved, I keep getting it overlapped with this thing, this movie called House 2, the second story, that also has time travel and dinosaurs and stuff in it. But they're both made around the same time. I don't think they had any of the same crew in them. And so I wanted to do this for a podcast, and it was on YouTube, so we could watch it for free. Piracy. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess it's not piracy. It's been up for 6 years now, so I guess if the studio cared, it's probably just no one cares anymore. Yeah. It's a really bad movie, guys. It has a lower Rotten Tomato score than Spawn. Yeah, now this might be the lowest rated movie we've done. It's really bad. So why precocious kids? Does this remind you of children? Like, that was the only thing to me, because these people are all in their 30s. They're pretending to be high schoolers, but these are the oldest high schoolers outside of the Grease movie.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you could call them precocious in the sense they managed to figure out how to operate an alien warp drive, even if they don't, even if it's mostly just turning it off and on.
Yeah. Yeah. So for those of you who are guessing on the Facebook group, no one would guess this one, I don't think. So there you go. We pulled one out of left field for you. I have 4 pages of notes before I got too bored to keep taking notes, but I think I got all the way to the end by the end. So Matt, let's start at the beginning. I guess since you're defending, you can go ahead and give me some notes. How does
okay,
this...
so it starts out with a young man named Michael Harlan, who's played by...
Nobody.
I don't have... The only person who has any I'm aware of in this movie at all is Dennis Hopper. He's their science teacher.
Well, and Fisher Stevens is kind of a big deal.
He is?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I'd never heard of him.
Really?
No, I mean, Dennis Hopper, we all know who Dennis Hopper is, but...
Yeah, Dennis Hopper from kids' movies like Apocalypse Now.
And Waterworld.
Gross. Those are such bad movies. Fisher Stevens is a huge deal. But yeah.
Yeah, so in this one, Fisher Stevens plays this Italian gangster wannabe from Brooklyn who's living out in the sticks because his parents are divorced.
Yeah, it's kind of Fisher Stevens' game. He always plays weird racial characters. He played an Indian movie in the Short Circuits, you know, the little robot with Johnny Five. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was an Indian in that one. Just kind of who he plays. He just plays general racial stereotypes. He's a character called the Plague in Hackers.
Yeah, so all right. So there's Michael Harlan and his buddy Vinny. It turns out they have to have a science project to graduate. They don't have a science project. And their old hippie teacher is kind of putting his foot down, even though he seems to much rather be the nurturing type. But sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And so Michael and this kind of nerd girl who has basically been stalking him to get him in the yearbook sneak into a boneyard and abandon where the military stores all its old aircraft. And they stumble across the engine of a crashed flying saucer that none other than President Eisenhower about 30 years before had told them just to get rid of it. So they just abandoned it in a military airfield and they take it home with them. And along the way, it starts sucking the power. It kind of sucks the power out of their car or out of gadgets just lying around, and all hell breaks loose and actually plug it into the school power.
It's about as interesting as Matt says. This is might be the most boring movie I've ever seen. But we should start at the beginning. So the cold open is 1957, where Eisenhower is I can be sci-fi nerd here, but it's actually referencing an event that quote unquote really happened. But they got it wrong by 2 years because they didn't fact check, or 3 years actually. But apparently in 1954, he was golfing in Palm Springs where he quote unquote took ill after dinner and went to an airbase where apparently he met a UFO and signed a treaty called the Treaty of Gaeta because nerd stuff. And though nerd or sci-fi people claim it really happened because, the cover was he had chipped his tooth on a bone when he was eating fried chicken. Uh-huh. But all of the dental reports are kept very close track of. And if you read his medical reports, he didn't go to a dentist that night.
Dun, dun, dun.
And the wife of the dentist, who he apparently went to go see, said she never saw the president.
Dun, 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 dun.
But it was 3 years after the events of the date they're doing, even though that's clearly what they're referencing, so whatever. We even get a line from Eisenhower where he says freaky, because why not? And the entire airbase is filled with people with 1980s porn mustaches because they couldn't worry about continuity. And in fact, all of the guards show up later as cops in Act 3 because I looked for them.
Well, yeah. I didn't notice that. I mean, at all.
That's why I'm the host of the podcast, Matt.
Or maybe I watch films to enjoy them.
I doubt that, man. You enjoy some really bad movies.
Yeah, we had words the other night at the watching Cineprov Masters of the Universe.
Well, he thought it was an excellent film.
No, I thought it was entertaining until about the last third and people started making really bad decisions, but we digress.
Well, no one makes any decisions in this movie, so we can kind of go there.
So they have no agency.
Well, no one's even smart enough to have agency, I'd argue. So we're introduced to the science teacher played by Dennis Hopper named Bob Roberts, because mm-hmm. that's a reference to a movie that came out the same year called Bob Roberts, who was an SNL character named Bob Roberts, who ran for president. And how do we know that he's a hippie loving guy? Because he says man about six times. He's Dennis Hopper doing Dennis Hopper.
And he has a big old peace sign necklace and keeps talking about Woodstock.
And he takes a hit of a nitrous oxide canister before the scene ends because people just are driving him nuts. And again, to reiterate, Vince and Michael are the dumbest characters we've had in a long time in these movies. He's a grease monkey, right? He works on cars and is essentially in the auto body shop at school the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of his thing.
Yeah, he wants to build his own car brakes as his science project, and Dennis Hopper is like not having that. He wants him to challenge himself.
Well, and he also wants it to be a science project, which to the end of the movie's credit, he does nothing. He does not end up having a science project. He steals some alien technology, doesn't do anything with it, and nearly destroys the town.
But he manages to create a time warp that sends Dennis Hopper back to Woodstock, and so he gets an A.
Yeah, because Dennis Hopper really doesn't care. He is a very poorly developed character. Did you really say you watch movies to enjoy them? You watch movies to rewrite them and make fan fiction about them. Best as I can.
I'm just less picky. You know, I mean, yeah, when problems are obvious, they're obvious. But something can be fun and be silly. This is just not fun because it's kind of slow moving and dull. Except until the later part when the time warp starts bringing in aliens and mutants and whatnot, and then things get somewhat more interesting.
The last about is, well, not the very end. The very end is the same. It's like 5 minutes. So there's about 10 minutes near the end that's kind of interesting. But this movie is just kind of a huge mess. Nothing really. Well, we'll get to it. So a woman dressed like Fred Flintstone, Wilma Flintstone, who's supposed to be his girlfriend, breaks up with him for no reason.
Because the romance astrologer in Cosmo basically told her to.
This is set up so that he can date a nerd. The only reason that he's allowed to date a nerd is because he's just been dumped and he's on the rebound, which is something that Vince says.
Well, they kind of get into this interesting a little bit. Like Crystal, the girlfriend, basically dumps him because he's really self-absorbed and drags her to car shows, doesn't care about her interests at all.
No.
And meanwhile, that he's still higher in the treatment of women food chain than Vinny, because Vinny's like, you know, you treat a girl like dirt and she'll love you. And she's like, that's what my old man says. And he's like, well, what does your mom say? They're divorced.
That made me laugh. That was a good joke. That was the best. I wrote that down word for word.
So however self-absorbed Michael is, he's still somewhat more empathetic than Vinny. Whereas Vinny is shaking a kid down for payphone money at one point.
And you said Michael's good. What does he do on the date with what's her name?
Drags her to an Air Force boneyard. And oh, you're talking about.
Yeah, no, that's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, and they go rummaging for his science project.
And she thought she was going out on a date. Like, she's wearing like a pink sweater and looks really cute. And yeah, no, he's an asshole too. Mike, he is 100% a horrible person. But the thing is, they don't have characters. Like, their characterization is one has a racialized accent The other one likes cars and is kind of a dick to women. That's kind of the only characters they have. The only characteristic he's given past that is that his dad is dating like a Mary Kay consultant or something.
Yeah, and they kind of elope to Vegas partway through the movie. And he's like, you know, socialize with your stepmother. And he's like, what?
And then he escapes. He sneaks out.
Yeah.
That's kind of it. Like they don't bother giving him any characterization. This movie's kind of shittily written. But anyway, so the nerd chick essentially attracts Michael by letting her car break down, by disconnecting one of the caps on.
Yeah, she sabotages her own engine to get his attention.
No, and that is. You know, and then she flashes her, you know, blues behind like these huge Coke bottle glasses that were very hip in 1985 and gets him to pick her up. He's also an asshole there because he refuses to even knock on the door. He says, I'll honk and you come outside. And he goes, you don't want to meet my parents? He goes, no, I'll honk and you meet me outside, because he's just kind of a prick. And anyway, so like you said, they go to an Air Force boneyard. They break in. They are looking for something to steal to become a science project, effectively. He makes reference to something from a helicopter. They fall into a hole and find this glowy thing.
Yeah, it was an old fallout shelter. I guess they haven't been keeping it up. And they find the engine from the UFO from the prologue.
Well, we don't know if it's the engine or not.
Well, they mentioned in the prologue the engine was removed. And here's something I'm going to kind of nerd out a little bit. A lot of people online in science discussions say that FTL, faster than light travel, implies time travel as well. Their rationale, I don't really understand. But so we have the flying saucers almost certainly from outside our solar system, so it has to be faster than light somehow. So, but a warp drive that can also warp time as well as space. Somebody did a little smidgen of research, at least.
Okay.
A little.
This is the laziest thing, man. It's a plasma ball attached to some refuse from Aliens Part 2 or whatever.
Yeah, it's like that thing, that little ball that has a lightning in it. You can put your finger on it.
Yeah, it's a plasmasphere. Something you get from, like, I don't know, Spencer's Gift or, like, the school science project fair thing for, like, $10. And it looks cheap. Like, the whole thing is the cheapest plastic you could imagine. And we're supposed to be very impressed. I don't know when they were invented to the public, so maybe it was new in 1985. But he's touching this thing like he's, like he's stoned out of his mind. And he's just kind of like, whoa! It's just lazy. But whatever. I guess we assume it's the engine from the opening scrawl. I don't know why it's just in this hole in the basement. When none of the rest of the spaceship is.
Yeah, they mentioned they'd remove the engine already, and Eisenhower's like, get rid of it. Like, the President of the United States would order a fallen starship trashed. Ever.
That was kind of Eisenhower's thing. To be a nerd, like you just said, that was kind of his big deal, if you believe the sci-fi community, or the UFO community, which I particularly don't. But anyway, long story short, Vinny drives off. Like, then we get reintroduced to Vinny, who's just kind of hanging around.
By hanging around, in the back seat of the car with some punk girl.
Yeah, I forget her name.
I don't think she was named.
I'm sure she was. I took notes because he does something no man would do, which is turn down sex, but whatever. Then when he's driving off, there's a car behind him honking at him for whatever, and he has a lever on his dashboard that makes a glowing middle finger come out of the back of his car, which honestly made me laugh so much.
So there's something you liked.
Oh, I mean, Fisher Stevens is funny. He always plays a racist stereotype, but he's funny. That's why he keeps ending up in these movies. Like, this one got him a huge movie next time. Where he plays an Indian from India, and then the movie after that he plays a Mexican, and the movie after that he plays an Indian chief, because as an American guy who is just an English guy, he just plays whatever he wants. But yeah, so we get this scene where they're trying to make the thing work, so they attach like a car battery to it, it starts to glow, and then they get this really, really, really cheap, like, it looks like something from a high school play that looks like a ancient Roman vase appears out of nowhere. And they think not much of it. They just put it in a bin and leave it behind.
Well, we're not dealing with the sharpest knives in the drawer here.
No, these are the dumbest people, again, in the whole school.
Yeah, they don't figure out what's going on until they somehow get warped 2 hours into the future and miss their science final. So then they have to go find the local nerd guy who kind of explains things to them.
Who gives them a book on Scientology, if I recall correctly. Go.
I don't know about that, but I mean, if you want to get sociological, you know, he could be some sort of toxic nerd stereotype. He's real jealous that Ellie is with Mike, so he recruits like the local thug brigade to spy on them in exchange for doing their homework.
And this, and again, to emphasize this, I texted Matt when I was watching it. The dialogue for the jockey types seem to be written by nerds. And the ones who are written by about nerds are written by jocks. These are the worst written characters I've seen in movies in a very long time. It's like a Revenge of the Nerds sequel. It's really that bad. I think there's a reason why you can watch it for free on YouTube. Everyone wanted to distance themselves from this. For a movie that's otherwise pretty clean, like there isn't like gratuitous nudity. It's not like one of those 80s movies that you just can't show anywhere anymore. This one is just not very good. Anyway, like you said, after playing with the thing, and it does something which it never does again, which is pushes them forward in time for 2 hours. They never go forward in time again. They send one guy back in time, but that's not explained. None of the science in here is actually explained at all. So they attach when they attach the car battery to it. We also see an axe get thrown for some reason,
mm-hmm.
And then we get introduced to the fact that everyone in this town is an asshole. Like, the nerd is an asshole to him. Other teachers are assholes to him. Kids randomly are assholes to each other. This is a world filled with jerks because I guess that's characterization in this movie. And then finally, they end up going to meet up with Hopper outside of his van. He says, look, you missed your final. You failed the class. That's it. And he says, look, we have something to show you. And if you pass your science fair project... you might have a chance of passing, which, again, he's relenting again because he really doesn't care. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you got?
Okay, well, the ending sequence I've referenced earlier when they plug in...
We're still 45 minutes away from the ending.
We haven't gotten to the part where somehow they have to stop the energy from traveling through power lines.
We're not even there yet either.
Well, it's after he gets time warp. They accidentally warp Bob.
Yeah.
They somehow don't think to go to the school circuit breaker. So instead they go to try and get some dynamite and blow up the power lines.
Yeah, so this movie goes on forever. Bob... They do end up meeting with Bob later after we get introduced to the potential stepmom. She's painted the whole house pink. It's really not good. And this is when he decides to escape out his window. He goes to meet up with Bob, and they attach it to the car battery, and time and space starts getting all wibbly-wobbly.
wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff?
Pretty much. It does look like a very 80s Doctor Who episode. That mediocre stuff in the middle...
I've only seen a few old episodes, and I remember thinking how strange they looked, like the way they were shot, and I think I realized they were shot on video.
Yeah, and most of this is shot on video as well. It's not 35 millimeter, that's for damn sure. Bob, it shorts out the battery starts to melt, which is weird, and so he disconnects it and then shoves it directly into the outlet, like you said. Time kind of opens up like a wormhole, like Masters of the Universe. Sucking in Bob, which again is something that's not ever happened before or will ever happen again. And yeah, at this point, the cops kind of show up. They escape out the window, leaving people behind. They don't tell anyone what's happening. And while Vinny is singing the Mission Impossible theme, his big characterization is he likes TV. And so he just starts referencing other TV shows because that's something that happens.
Yeah, anytime something happens, he has a TV or movie reference for it, including a lot of sci-fi movies.
And then at this point, then they start out racing it. They steal a bunch of dynamite to blow up a power station, substation.
Yeah, their idea is it's gotten into the power lines. They're trying to cut off this energy field that's moving through the wires by blowing up a power line tower.
Yeah, and they're arrested by the cops. where we get the idiotic line, "Our tax dollars at work," because why not? Because every other cliched line has been said at this point, so that's kind of it. And at this point, after two lesbian jokes and calling someone a faggot, they end up back at the school to see that it's been taken over by every sort of what's it.
Yeah, Ellie had gone back to the school on her own to try and deactivate only Sherman, the kind of jealous nerd boy, is there, and he won't let her unplug it, and it just goes totally haywire, creating a vortex over the school, and all sorts of crazy stuff starts happening.
And at this point, the kind of interesting part of the movie shows up, right? Michael and Vinny decide to go into the school to try to rescue people. The nerdy guy is kind of redeemed, sort of, but not really. And this is where all the effects budget was spent, right?
Yeah, like they fight, they go into a school with guns, which I'm sure people would be outraged by today.
I don't think they show up with guns.
They do have guns. They eventually get guns,
right?
Somehow.
But I thought they got that from the Vietnam section.
Oh yeah, they eventually do get guns. I think maybe they went in with a shotgun or something early on, but they eventually get rifles.
Yeah, they get assault rifles from. But they're like specifically like they wander onto the set of like a Vietnam movie.
Yeah, so they first see Romans, and one of them fights and kills a gladiator, and then Cleopatra shows up, and Vinny is obviously lusting after her. And then they basically find a transplanted chunk of Vietnam. And there's an American pilot who's been captured by some communist guerrillas. So they ambush them, beat the stuffing out of them, or shoot them and take their guns just in time to fight a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah, the T-Rex is like the best part of this movie. It's on screen for, I timed it, 93 seconds, but it's awesome. It actually looks pretty good. It's actually a really good effect. And that's kind of it. They blow it up with the grenade launcher on the bottom of their assault rifle. And that's kind of it. Like they leave the school.
And everything ends up being blamed on their hippie teacher because they think he might have tried to do a terrorist bombing. And he's dragged off in the police car. He's like, you guys get an A because I went to Woodstock.
And and he saw a Beatles concert. And he listed like four things.
Yeah, he got to basically relive in a span of, in real time, probably about an hour or two, he got to relive all the 60s again.
Which is whatever. I mean, and yes, they arrest the teacher right away for some reason, which is idiotic.
They'd found his necklace at the scene of the break-in where they'd stolen all the dynamite.
Right, but they thought, if I recall correctly, that he was missing. That's why the kids were called in originally, right? Like that he was missing, and the kids were suspects in his disappearance. And then he shows up and they arrest him. It's the most baffling thing. Don't worry, this movie makes no sense. That's kind of it. Like the movie ends, the nerd is kind of redeemed, but he ends up being alone, and the girl who now doesn't have her glasses on, so she's hot by 80s terms, is with the jockey guy, and that's kind of it. That's the end of the movie. Play the song My Science Project, and you're out. So what do you think, honestly?
Okay, I didn't hate it as much as you did, but it's kind of draggy in the middle. It's not that entertaining. I mean, I gave it a 7 on my blog. I might knock it down to a 6.5 because I'm not even sure it's really worth seeing once. But, I mean, I don't think the characterization sucked as much as you say it does, but it's not great either. And the special effects are kind of dated. That's what you get when it's in the 80s. Either got the bad CGI, which I brought about bad CGI, we talked earlier in the summer, the re-release about Last Starfighter. The same guy who I think wrote The Last Starfighter, Kevin Bettinell or something, he wrote and I think directed this one.
Mm-hmm.
Although when I watched it, the movie reminded me a lot actually of The Flight of the Navigator. Like in terms of how, I was thinking it was more like kind of like one of those Wonderful World of Disney movies in the late 80s and early 90s.
No.
Except those were not nearly as violent. Like our heroes killed several people, Viet Cong, a Roman gladiator, and a bunch of post-nuclear mutants with lasers.
Yeah, that's also never explained.
They were from the future.
No, well, that's what they say. And then specifically, the nerd says they're from the post-apocalyptic future, which just means it's going to happen no matter what, where it's unavoidable. My question is, what happens to all the corpses? They just stay, right? So, like, someone is cleaning up a T-Rex for the next week?
Yeah. I mean, like, maybe they can cut it up and have like some kind of giant fundraiser barbecue with it. I mean, it probably tastes like chicken.
That's funny.
Lions Club will love that.
He also wrote, this guy, Jonathan Bethel, Butel or whatever his name is, wrote My Science Project, The Last Starfighter, Freddy's Nightmare, an episode of the TV show, and Theodore Rex, the movie where Whoopi Goldberg walks around with the dad from Dinosaurs.
Where Whoopi Goldberg sells the last of her dignity.
Well, she gets an Academy Award a few years later. She gets it back. She's fine. Don't worry about Whoopi
Goldberg.
A glorious
resurrection.
Yeah, right. Here's the thing about this movie for me. It frustrated me. I don't think it's as bad as I'm pitching it, but I thought it would be a cheesy 80s movie, and there's nothing to it. Like, even if they had relied more on the jocks versus the nerds, and the jocks needed a nerd... But they don't even do that. Like, the jocks hate this guy because he's a car nerd. They, like, and for some reason, the jocks put on Star Wars helmets. The jocks wear, like, a Darth Vader mask and two Stormtrooper masks to cover his car in shaving cream, which makes no sense.
Yeah, I think the idea was that he was trying to screw with, that Sherman was trying to screw with Michael because he was mad that Ellie was with him. So he recruited all the jock guys
as
his goon squad.
He knows who they are. Why do it?
Because so everyone else doesn't know who they are?
It's a reference to another movie. It's a reference to Revenge of the Nerds, where the nerd has sex with the girl wearing a Darth Vader mask. It's just a reference to another movie. They're all references to other movies. I don't know. Like, I just wish that it had anything. Like, but this movie doesn't even feel like a cliched 80s film. It just, like you said, it just feels like nothing happens. And it's only 100 minutes. But in that 100 minutes, it feels like you could have cut out half of it, at least, and would have been fine. I don't know why he had to have a girlfriend at the beginning to dump, other than to make him make it acceptable that he wants to date a nerd, which is something that Vinny says. Vinny is the best part of it.
Oh, yeah, he's the funniest part of it.
Well, I would say that makes him the best part, because
yeah,
there's not any other jokes.
I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah, other than the T-Rex, which is the best part of it, but it's just very short. And actually, it still holds up. It looks better than the T-Rex at the Universal Studios ride that jumps out at you at the Jurassic Park ride. I think it's great. But again, it's only on screen for a few minutes of a 100-minute movie. It's just really weird. I don't know. So your precocious kids are Michael and Vinny. Enjoy them. They're precocious. Those rapscallion kids destroyed space and time in Matt's movie this week. Mm-hmm. So we have two more weeks of precocious kid movies. Keep voting on Myopia. See if you can guess the next one. The next two have... I'll give you a hint. They have more of a 90s feel. They have more of the Nickelodeon, Disney Channel kind of young kids being, oh, those adults are just getting in my way feel than this one did in particular. But stay tuned next week and every future week as we put another piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Candice Burns, and executive produced by Nick Hoffman and Candice Burns. It is produced by Daniel Suttis, Matthew Quinn, and Thomas Kermit. We are a proud member of the ESO Network and a product of Dude Letter Podcasting. Our theme is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find it at incomptech.com. It is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3 license. And thanks!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.